Hello, and welcome to The Spark. I'm Matt, and by the grace of the Nashville Public Library, I'm here to talk about the creative process and the joy of appreciating the creations of others. Thankfully, I'm not going to do it alone. Joining me today as a host and music reporter from Nashville Public Radio, it's Justin Barney.
Hello!
Hello. Thanks for coming on.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So, what have you been listening to this week?
Oh, wow. Just gone right to music.
Lately, I feel like I listen to a lot of music.
Sure.
I listen to a lot of music all the time. And always like to be listening to new things. And there's some things that I feel like I want to – I think in music, the feeling that I love the most is kind of like being obsessed with something. Mm. Is like really falling in love with an album or an artist. And you just can't force it. And I've tried to force it many times. I try to like want to love something that everybody else is loving, but it kind of has to come to you. And I feel like I've been in a kind of a period where for a while I wasn't obsessed with anything, but right now I am absolutely obsessed with the band Geese and their album Getting Killed, which just came out last Friday. Cameron Winter is their lead singer, and he released an album in December of last year called Heavy Metal that I was similarly obsessed with, and I just can't stop listening to this album.
What's their vibe? What's Geese's deal?
Cameron Winter is a wailer.
Okay.
he kind of like, he sings like, it's not really singing as much as it is kind of like this, there's some kind of like chanting element that I think I love. I love artists that have terrible voices. Mm. And Cameron Winter definitely has a different kind of voice. When I was a teenager, I really loved Conor Oberst and Bright Eyes, and he has a really horrible voice. And I was kind of felt like, if you have a horrible voice and you choose to sing, there's something that you have to, like, you have to be doing this.
Absolutely.
Some kind of, like, calling, you know? And Cameron Winter, I think, is a fantastic songwriter. And I love how different it is. And I love his vocal delivery. And the band, I think, has really figured it out. And they released an album a couple years ago that I was just kind of, like, so-so on. But I'm fully obsessed with Geese.
Nice. No, I definitely agree that oftentimes passion overtakes vocal, like, virtuosity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I am, like, I'm a very passionate person. Mm. And so I feel like for music that is, there's different places for music, but I feel like I love something that, like, really comes from the soul. And sometimes that, I don't know, it just feels like artists with terrible voices kind of, like, you know, have got that going on, I guess.
Absolutely. So, Nashville Public Radio, anyone not familiar with your work with them, what is sort of your role? What's your wheelhouse within our public radio stations?
So, I am a music reporter. I come from, I think as a reporter, I come from a kind of different world. I started being a DJ on the radio. And so, I work for, so Nashville Public Radio is WPLN, which does the news, and WNXP, which is a music station. I am a DJ on WNXP, and I am a reporter on WPLN. And my work on WPLN as a music reporter plays on both radio stations. I was like, when I DJ, it's just on WNXP. But my work goes across both stations. As a music reporter, we have two music reporters. We have Julie Height, who is one of the greatest music reporters in the country. She was a big draw for me to come here because I've been reading her and listening to her forever. And so my beat and operation as a music reporter, I think, is more like, comes from more like the fan side. And I am like, I'm very passionate about the music that I like. And I think I engage with music from a fan standpoint. And I'm an entertainer, and so I think that, like, I think of that in my reporting. Mm.
So a fan standpoint as opposed to, like, an industry standpoint or
yeah.
a critical standpoint?
Yeah, I think that, like, especially working in a newsroom, we have a lot of journalists who are very serious journalists. Mm-hmm. We have some of the best journalists in the country who like stand for like speaking truth to power and who come to journalism from this place of like, you know, of truth telling and importance. And I love being around those people. But that wasn't my call to journalism. I didn't come in from that angle. I come to journalism like through music and wanting to know more about my favorite songs. I come to journalism through reading liner notes and albums. You know, like I think that is my interest. And so kind of like coming through music is just a different angle.
And you talked about being drawn here. What was your starting as a DJ in your radio career? Was that in Milwaukee?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Born and raised in Milwaukee, very proudly. I'm wearing a Green Bay Packer hat right now. I've got a Wisconsin tattoo. I love Wisconsin, and I loved being there. And I worked at a radio station there called 88.9 Radio Milwaukee, which is kind of like the WNXP in Milwaukee, but there's no news side. It's just a music station, standalone, very important to the community, very community-based, very involved in the city of Milwaukee. I think a real treasure. There's very few places like that. And I was an intern there. I graduated from UW-Madison, and then I got a three-month unpaid internship that I turned into an entire year of working unpaid before somebody unceremoniously left and created a space for me. And then I was a DJ, a music director, and APD for 10 years. And then a job opened here at WNXP and WPLN. And I had done this podcast called Backspin, The Search for Milwaukee's First Hip-Hop Song. And I really got bit by storytelling and really got involved in like doing that. It was the story of Milwaukee's first hip hop song. And I had like met with somebody who, Andy Noble, who was like, yeah, this band kind of accidentally made Milwaukee's first hip hop song. And I was like, what's that all about? I want to pursue that. And just like following that down, like kind of doing like really investigative work about music really drew me in. And I was like, I like hearing investigative work about other topics, but like, I like music. Yeah. And I was like, I want to do that. And we have at Nashville Public Radio, we have great journalists and we have music. And so I was like, yeah, I want to go and do that.
So looking at the sort of lineup of stories that are coming out at WPLN and music stories on WNXP, there's, you know, Nashville Artists of the Month, there's Records of the Week, these recurring features, and some of them have your name on them, depending on the week and the artist. How do those get divvied up?
That's a great question. We have a meeting, and it's kind of like who wants to do it the most, mm-hmm. who is drawn to, you know, what's going on. Last month, the artist of the month was Emily Hines, and I did that. And we kind of had a meeting where we're like, who should be the artist of the month? Mm. And that's like, that can be tough because it's like looking into the future, and it's hard to know like all the people that will be releasing albums. That can be like a difficult part of setting that up. Because once albums are out, it's kind of like easier to be like, oh, well, these are all the albums that were released. These are the ones. But like you have to know what's coming to decide an artist a month and months in advance. Mm-hmm. And then somebody will just kind of raise their hand, you know, and be like, well, I know that, you know, this month it's Snooper. Snooper is releasing this album. And Jason was like, you know, they're a third man band. And we had done stories about them before. And their story is kind of building. And so he was like, I want that one. And for Emily Hines, I just loved her album. And I like when you have a personal connection to it, when you have like when you are passionate about it, that's just going to show in the work and that's going to be present in the story. And so, yeah, it's just kind of. It's just kind of whoever raises their hand and whoever wants to do it.
Yeah, yeah. And it certainly sounds like Everyone at WNXP specifically is constantly listening to pounds and pounds and pounds of new music.
Yeah, that's the job.
How does that and has it affected how you listen to music and sort of your relationship to it?
That is a great question, one that I have thought about a lot and kind of had a lot of feelings about. Because before I was a music director, before I was on the radio, I was just a fan in the purest way that a fan is. And then it's like when you have to listen to stuff, when that is your life, when people are sending songs and being like, what do you think about this? What can it do for you? You know, what can it do for an artist? And it becomes your job. I think you can feel like, or you can think of it as being less enjoyable. But I have never found that. I think like me being able to hear something that I love and bring it to other people, that's what I love about music. That's the best part, creating this community, creating other people, meeting other fans, making other fans, being able to, I've always liked small artists, and so being able to like work with a small artist and bring an audience to them. There's very few places that are doing music journalism and very few places for artists to have their music heard. Everybody can put their music on Spotify, and I'm glad that people are able to do that, to get your work out there. And so many people spend so much time making great music and then not being able to get it in front of people who want to hear it or would hear it. And so it's a real joy to be able to put somebody's hard work in front of an audience that will hopefully like it.
Yeah, and that is sort of traditionally, depending on your philosophy of media criticism, one of the like true mandates of the critic is to elevate work that they think is not getting sufficient attention.
Yes, absolutely. I definitely think that's the job. You know, that's the part I love. That's the part I've done since I was a kid, you know? And I think it's fun being in radio. So like on the DJ side, that's more like as a DJ, when you're talking between songs, you can just kind of talk about anything, you know? And it's like I like both sides. I love doing both things. As a journalist on WPLN, every single word is like written down, reviewed, edited, like it really goes through the work so that you listening your time is valued. We are telling a succinct story here in an efficient way. And on the DJ side, you just kind of riff, you know, but you got it. There's an art to it. You got to make it entertaining. And in that way, I've always seen myself as being a critic, like at large. And like, I love movies. Like, I love music, but I love movies as much. And I read a lot of books. And so I kind of see myself as a DJ of being a critic, you know, writ large for music. And also, like, if I've seen a movie that I think that you would like because you're listening to this music, you know, like, I will talk about the new Paul Thomas Anderson movie. Or if I, you know, read a book, I'll let you know. This book is worth reading, you know.
And to that point, I very strongly hold this belief that like no art form is superior to another.
Yeah.
But they do have different strengths, right? And in terms of what they do in their medium, but I think also in the kinds of communities they foster.
Yeah.
And to the point of like sharing and extolling music that you love, it's a lot easier to be like, hey, listen to this 3-minute song.
Yeah.
Than reading a tome or going to a theater to watch a film.
Oh, for sure. But I think, you know, speaking to community, I think that is probably 50% of it for me. And I think for a lot of people, it's like, I love community. I'm a community guy, you know, like at my heart, like at my base, the thing that I long for the most is community. The thing that fills my cup the most is, you know, I love being in a pit at a show, you know, being around all these people that like, you're like, oh, we love this thing together. That's a really strong bond. I think that's why I like smaller artists too, because it's like you really chose to, you know, be a part of this community. And I think that sharing music with each other is like, that's my favorite thing. When like my friends are talking about something, I got a song to send somebody to. I love listening to something on my own. I love that it means something to me personally. I love that music, I think especially, is a way for people to access emotion. I think it's a strong way for men to access emotion. I think it's a strong way for me to access emotion. I think all art does that effectively. I'm an emotional person, and that helps heighten those senses. And so I love that, but also, you know, sharing that emotion with other people. I think that's why I love going to a theater. You know, you're all in that together.
In terms of smaller artists and the communities around them, I feel like there is a very specific feeling to going to a show for an artist you've never heard of, and everyone around you knows the lyrics. It's like, oh, they have their people.
Yeah. I remember maybe my favorite show that I ever went to in my entire life. It's at the Cactus Club in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, my favorite venue of all time. I chose to live two blocks away from the Cactus Club in Milwaukee because I love Cactus Club so much. It's maybe 100 people can fit in Cactus Club. It's a bar, and then they got like it's an old house. It's been there for, you know, over 100 years, and it's a bar, and then there's a little room that can fit 100 people. And Craig Finn, lead singer of the Hold Steady, one of my all-time favorite bands, and Craig Finn was playing Cactus, which was weird because it's kind of like he's too big for that room, and I had tickets to the show. And I've seen Craig Finn. I've seen the Hold Steady a million times. And I showed up a little late. And so I showed up during the middle of the opener. I didn't know who it was. And I walked in, and he's this guy. He's on an acoustic guitar, and he's singing the song. And I could like hear people singing. I could hear other voices. And I was like, I had seen a guy in that room the week before play with this pedal that was like a harmonizer, and he would like sing and it would kind of like self-harmonize. I'd never seen like a pedal like that, and I thought that he was like kind of like self-harmonizing, but then like I looked around the room and it was like everybody was kind of softly singing all the lyrics of the songs, and it was I got goosebumps. I was like, what is this? It was like this quiet chorus, and it was amazing. It was one of the most magical moments I've ever felt in my life. The singer was John K. Sampson, and he was singing songs from his band, the Weaker Thans, that were kind of like moderately indie famous in the mid-2000s, and I didn't know that. And just like walking into this community of people that were all singing these songs, that was like the greatest experience ever. Maybe my favorite show.
On the Hold Steady, I am one of those people where, like, I will very often find artists. I'm very scattershot in my listening, and not always full albums. It's one of those things where I will very often find an artist who I like these three or four songs.
Then
I hold them close to my heart forever.
Sure.
And the Hold Steady is one of those bands for me where I discovered them a few years ago. I think I was reading a book about a saxophonist.
Nice.
Who had toured with them? I don't remember. That's
Franz
not relevant.
Nikolai?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
I think that was him. Someone who had toured with them who wrote a book about touring to various venues in the former Soviet bloc.
Oh my God, that sounds awesome.
It was a trip, but I had not heard anything quite like the Hold Steady when I first started listening to them.
Speaking to people with horrible voices, I mean that's kind of like Craig Finn's thing. I mean,
right.
He's nasally. He's not really a singer. He's more of a sayer, but he's an amazing lyricist.
Yeah, right. And that was the thing. Maybe this is going to speak to like some limited vocabulary on my part in terms of the breadth of music. But it was almost on the other end of the spectrum from like a Bruce Springsteen in terms of like the big sound of the band and the like deep narrative behind every lyric.
Yeah. I think that there's a lot of Springsteen in the Hold Steady, in their kind of like they're a powerful, energetic rock band. And what are your three songs, or what are your couple songs? I gotta know. I mean, like Craig Finn, I grew up going to Catholic school, and I think like every time I hear a person kind of like insert a biblical thing into a non-biblical atmosphere. I mean, Cameron Winter, like Geese, like he there's in this in the new album, there's like, you know, he talks about washing the feet, and he talks about like there's all these like these, and I feel like it's a very Nashville thing to like have to also like love a biblical reference. But like Craig Finn does that, you know, in spades.
True. Very true. My three that I have saved on my phone
are
The Stove and the Toaster.
Interesting. I would never have guessed that one in a million years.
Stuck Between Stations.
Yeah, banger.
And Family Farm.
Banger. Yeah. Those are great ones. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just one of those instances where I heard about them. I did like a deep dive for 3 or 4 hours one night before bed. It was like, and these three songs are mine.
Yeah. I remember, I think I first heard Hold Steady, I think reading a Rolling Stone magazine that I rented from the Franklin Public Library back in the day. And I remember being at the library reading that magazine. And it was like there was a little section about this band, the Hold Steady. They just released Separation Sunday. And I was like, oh, like I'm going to find this little indie band. And I think I might have rented this CD from the library. And I remember going to my locker. And right next to me was Kyle Bennett, and we had our lockers. We had the Killer Bees, Barney Bennett, Barney Bartelt, and Barton. And Kyle Bennett was a grade above us. He was like running back for the football team, jockey guy, also artsy guy like me. And I wanted to impress him, and I was like, "You should listen to this band, The Hold Steady. They're amazing." And he was a big Red Hot Chili. He was in a Red Hot Chili Peppers cover band. I was like, "They're not that far different." And so I was like, "Kyle, you have to listen to it." I thought this was gonna be like me, like he's gonna come back and be like, "We're buddies forever." And he came back, and he was like, "I listened to that band, The Hold Steady. That sucks." I was so heartbroken. No. I thought that was going to be like the moment, but nah, he hated it.
No,
it's fine.
So in terms of you finding out about them via Rolling Stone, where was seeking out stuff about music, stories about music, a way that you discovered things like your whole life?
Oh my God. Yes. I think that goes back to my dad. My dad's a big liner notes guy. And I remember my dad, big Sam Cooke guy, big Sam Cooke, big Rod Stewart. Those are two big things we grew up listening to. And I remember him telling me that he found out about Sam Cooke because Rod Stewart did a song, maybe Bring It On Home to Me, and he was reading the liner notes, and it was by, it says in Prince, it says who wrote the song, and it said S. Cooke, C-O-O-K-E. And he went to the record store and was like, who is this Cooke guy? And he found a Sam Cooke record and then bought that and fell in love with Sam Cooke. And I feel like I do that a lot. And we, my dad and I, like love like kind of like that connection, you know, like once you can tie, you can like create the narrative or like, okay, I'm listening to Rod Stewart who's covering a Sam Cooke song. There's this like connection to each other. There's a connection through music, through time and place. I studied history in college, and there's a lot of history courses that are taught through this battle happened and then that battle happened, and kind of like history through political and military victories and passing back and forth is a very, it's like kind of the most forward, straightforward way to understand history. And so I understand why many classes are taught that way. But if you look at history through a cultural lens, through a musical lens, it's so interesting how musicians borrow from each other, how they speak to each other, how they speak to culture. Mm-hmm. And I think like music can tell us so much about ourselves, but also so much about like what's happening, and that interconnectedness I think is definitely part of that. And I have been, you know, I've been trying to make those connections my whole life. And I think like early, like a moment for me where like my dad getting the Sam Cooke record was, I remember in college, we loved Scott Walker. Scott Walker, British musician from the 70s, also kind of like an eccentric guy, and he had this song called Jackie. And in it, he sings, "They called me Jackie." And we loved that song. And I remember asking my buddy Jake Begum, my old roommate, and I was like, why do you say Jackie? His name is Scott. And I remember looking up the liner notes, and it was like written by this guy, Jacques Brel. Mm. And they called him Jackie because it was written by Jacques Brel, who is a French singer from the 60s and 70s that I then went to my store, Strictly Discs in Madison, and went down to the international section, bought a Jacques Brel album, and then became absolutely obsessed with Jacques Brel. He's like, and he's in my pantheon of like top 10 artists of all time. Like, Jacques Brel's in there for sure. And I love discovering artists that way.
Absolutely.
And makes it special.
Now, and similarly, I am one of those people where, like, I'm glued to Wikipedia pretty much at all times.
Yeah.
And just, like, being able to sort of 7 degrees of Kevin Bacon anything.
Yeah.
Is always fun.
I love liner notes because it is, I love a physical medium. Like, I love a vinyl record. I love, you know, reading those things and kind of, like, I love the difficulty of, like, a liner note like that. And, of course, I love, like, being able to just, like, look something up immediately. But I do also, like, love kind of the discipline and the difficulty of having to hunt something down. That's journalism, too, you know? Like, I love the hunt.
Yeah, I mean, a few episodes before this, I talked to a friend of mine who's a DJ here in town, and that we talked a lot about
for sure
vinyl and the appeal of vinyl. Is he's like almost a decade younger than me, mm-hmm. and that appeal is still so strong.
Mm-hmm.
And he continually talked about the hunt and the thrill of discovery.
Yes, and I think that it's like it's different now than it was, and I discovered a lot. I bought over when I was in high school. I went to Strictly Discs in Greenfield, Wisconsin, and I would just go through the way that I discovered music was I would just go through the CDs and I would look at it. I would find a CD that looked like it was good. Mm. I would judge a book by its cover, you know, and I would buy that CD. I probably bought over 100 CDs. That was what I did. Every week I'd go. I'd buy a blind CD and I would take it home, and most of the time it was good, or I learned to love it because it was like iTunes was in its infancy, and so it was like you didn't have like Spotify like or access to everything quickly, so you did kind of have to listen to a couple times, and I like that. And now there's so much that you don't have to do the physical hunting, which I did enjoy, but there's more to hunt through now, and it's on a computer, so it's different. But love the hunt.
Yeah, and the idea of loving the thing you have because it's the thing you have.
Yeah,
this gets talked about a lot, I think, with video games, where you know, before the advent of indie games being drastically available, and because indie games tend to be so much cheaper than typical AAA video games, as we call them. Yeah. Whatever three games you had for your GameCube, those were your ride or dies.
Yeah.
You were going to figure out every way
interact
with them
yes.
possible.
Yes, totally.
And that was me with music in my car. Is I had a 1998 Saturn SL2 that only had a cassette player.
Nice.
So the cassettes I could get my hands on, those were the albums that were just all of high school.
Wow, what were some of those?
Born in the USA.
Bruce Springsteen back again.
Best of Sam and Dave.
Best of Sam and Dave. That's a fun one. That's
a good
way to start your day.
It was.
Yeah. That's great.
Led Zeppelin 4 I had on cassette.
Wow.
Which, you know, when you're 17, you go, wow, this band Led Zeppelin.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah, in terms of storytelling in music and you being bitten by the bug with Backspin, have you, since sort of throwing yourself in the deep end of music reporting in that way, do you find that there are kinds of stories in the realm of music that you are drawn to?
Yeah. I had the other day, I had a story given to me by the great and wonderful Ann Powers, who writes about music for NPR. And Ann sent me a text, and she said, I got this friend who this thing happened to him, and it's not really the kind of story that I tell, but it is the kind of story that you tell.
You built a brand.
Yeah, and she was like, I think you're really going to like this. And the story was in Spokane, Washington in 2006. This girl named Michaela made a mix CD. And she had like full of like Rainer Maria and Modest Mouse and a lot of the indie rock songs from that time. And then she, you know, it was called Really Good Mix, as many good burn CDs are. And she then went about her life and, you know, lived and then came back to her parents' house and was having who was I feeling romantic about and nostalgic about your past. And she found Really Good Mix and she put it in a computer and uploaded it to iTunes. And all the songs popped up right away except for this one. And it said no artist, no title. And and she tried to Shazam it, didn't work. She tried Googling some stuff, didn't work. And then finally she put it up on YouTube and she said, can you help me find this song? And it was like, once she put up the bat signal, there's this community online called Lost Wave, and the Lost Wavers got on it. And the Lost Wavers are like detectors for defunct media. And they took this to the Lost Wave community and passed it around, tried to figure it out, and nobody could. And for 5 years, it was this mystery song that was bouncing around, other people trying to figure it out. This musician in Spokane, she had a local radio show, and he was like, it's got to be somebody from this area. So, and he went to this he went to a record store and he went through all of their old CDs and unidentified stuff and listened through to try to find this song. And then finally, this guy on the other side of the world, he didn't want me to say where he's from, so I won't say exactly, but I did an interview with him at it was 3 o'clock in the morning his time. And he had put one of the lyrics into MySpace. And MySpace, now they got rid of the servers because they were paying for it and nobody was on there. But you can still see the name of a song and the length. And the name of the song was a line in the song that they were looking for. The length was the same length. And he tracked it down to a bartender in Nashville. And he sent this bartender and musician a DM on Instagram and said, is this you? And it was Alex Caress, and the song is fantastic. And and Alex got this DM on Instagram and he was like, yeah, this is me. And he was connected to this community that had been looking for him for 5 years, and he had made the song when he was 18, and it was so raw, and he thought that it was going to find this audience, and it didn't find this audience. And it was just really, I loved that story because it had so much mystery, figuring things out, kind of diving deep. It had there was adventure there, but also a really kind of touching, an artist finding his audience.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I was nodding along as you were telling that story because I read the text version of that on the website, and I was fascinated by the idea of the Lost Wave community.
Yeah, right. Had that's, to me, that story had had everything. It had starting on a burn CD. It had a niche community of internet sleuths.
Yeah,
what? It was so weird and so interesting. Yeah.
Now it does tick every adventure box of there's this secret society at the heart of this mystery.
Yeah,
but it's a bunch of nerds on the internet who obviously, so I feel like someone in the Lost Wave community talking to you at 3 in the morning, their time is That's when they're doing their thing already.
Yeah. So true.
Do you want to talk about Music Citizens?
Yeah, sure. For sure.
Do you want to give the pitch real quick for anyone who hasn't listened yet?
Yeah. So I do I report a podcast called Music Citizens for WNXP and WPLN. It was my boss's idea, Jason Moon Wilkins, he's the host, and he has lived in Nashville since 1993. And his kind of like his thinking behind it was like, there's more people who work in the music industry per capita in Nashville than any other city in the world. And so we have all of these like music industry lifers. The music industry is something that is we are aware of it, but it's like in music, we interview artists. That is it. And there's all of these people that have all these great stories that are loved by their community, that do interesting things that we don't like really talk about or think about. And he's like, there's all these like legends here who have done like all these remarkable and amazing things, and we should highlight and talk about them. And so I saw that when I was coming here. That was like a draw for me. I knew that he had that idea, and I was like, I want to make that a reality. Mm. And that's a big part of my job and my day to day is doing Music Citizens. We have done 4 episodes. We're working on the 5. I made a big draft yesterday.
Nice.
And so it's going to go to group edit on Monday. But yeah, we've got 4 episodes out, and they're all fascinating twists and turns, and a lot of stories of people in the music industry and about the music industry.
Mm-hmm. So, having listened to all the episodes that exist so far,
Music Citizens, thank you.
Oh yeah, I mean, to your point, they're all fascinating. Like I think for me, the one I think about the most is I've forgotten the name of the most prolific piano tuner.
Oh, Brent. Yes. that was like, I mean, one thing we do, we work really hard on making them really sound rich. Mm. And a big part of every episode is me following somebody doing their job. Brent is the most prolific piano tuner in the world. I was like, that idea came because I have a couple friends who are piano tuners. And I was like, that's funny that we have a city who employs multiple piano tuners. Are there rivalries? Is there what's the deal? And I was like, who tunes the Ryman? Mm-hmm. Who tunes the Grand Ole Opry? Who tunes the Skirmerhorn? You know, like,
Who
watches the Watchmen? And it turns out it's all the same guy. it's Brent Arlich. He does all of them. Mm-hmm. And he inherited this empire from his dad. And then I got to go out with Brent, who also, it's part of it is like, you know, being, if you're in the music industry, you're probably a character of some sort, you know, like a lot of people like are drawn to entertainment because they're a bit of entertainers themselves. And that is certainly the case with Brent. He is quick with a joke. He is, you know, he's handy and hardworking and also very funny. And following him for a day where we did the Skirmerhorn, we tuned at the Ryman, we tuned at the house of, you know, some famous musicians. We did Reba McEntire's studio, and then hearing him tell all the stories and what goes into it and just like how underappreciated it is. Mm-hmm. I was really, really happy to do that story.
And you mentioned soundscapes, and that's one of the big things I noticed listening through is the sense of space that you get from the audio that you take of being on location with these people. So what does the setup look like that you're taking with you to these locations? Is it just you with like a few different sort of tech setups?
I'm a gadget guy, and I've always loved gadgetry. And like I'm a biker. And I love just different kinds of bikes. And I like, there's a certain part of being a DJ where I think anybody could do this job. I sit behind a mic, I play songs, and then I talk between them, and then I play another song. I'm like, anybody could do that. As And as a journalist, I like that I have a toolbox and I have my tools. Hmm. You know, it feels very like old school. It feels very like this is a Crazy World of Richard Scarry. Like this is a job, you know. And so I like having my tools. And I have a million ways to record. And I have a million microphones. Hmm. And I have tried all of them. And I have come up with the best setup. And the best setup is a Zoom Handy H3. That's basically like a tiny cube that has two XLRs. And you need an XLR cable and then a microphone. I've tried many. I'm sentimental to a few. The best is a Sennheiser MKE 600. It's just the best microphone that there is. And it's a shotgun mic. And it's super mobile. And so I will like have like a chore coat, and I'll have my Zoom in a pocket of the chore coat. I'll have the microphone in my other hand, and then I'm just following along. I'm just getting tape. And then also like I feel like part of being a journalist, part of the draw to me is like I feel like there's a bit of an artist in me. You know, I am a creator as well, and like this is my medium, and I love putting together those soundscapes and building. And to me, I'm so romantic about everything, but I'm romantic about radio. And I think that, like, the thing that radio does, that podcasts do, that the audio form has that everything else doesn't is the imagination. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's why I love reading, you know, like reading and audio. Those are imaginative mediums, and your imagination is greater than anything you could see. And so when I just put together the front 2.5 minutes for the newest episode of Music Citizens, and I go to New York. And I took 12 hours of audio, and I've got it down to 2.5 minutes, which is so much editing, but it's like you can hear cars honking. You can hear steam. You can, you know, you hear the an opening and a closing of a door. And I was there, and it's a street in New York, you know. But in your mind, it's the hustle and bustle of the metropolis, you know. And I love that. I love building that.
So to the point of sort of various metropolises, you've talked a few times about what has drawn you to Nashville.
Yeah.
How often do you get back to Milwaukee? Are you trying to be there frequently?
Oh, I get back to Milwaukee as much as I can. I have a twin brother, you know, and I think I'm very, very close to my family. And so and my community, you know, I built a community there for, you know, 30 years. And so I do try to get back all the time. I mean, especially right now, the Packers are playing. The Brewers are going to make a run for the pennant for the first time. Bucks are starting. We're getting into November. I mean, this is a good time. But yeah, I go back to Milwaukee all the time.
What would you say are some of the biggest similarities or differences?
Wow. Between Milwaukee and Nashville? This is a thing I think about all the time. It's a thing I talk about all the time. Milwaukee is a Midwest city. They're old. Mm. Milwaukee's an old, old city. Milwaukee was popping. It was at its absolute zenith in 1880. You know, it was like Miller, Pabst, Schlitz, the beer barons. You know, like it was for a while, Milwaukee was bigger than Chicago. There was like a battle of like what city is going to be. This is before LA, so it was like the second city, you know, to New York. And for a while, it was like it was Milwaukee, and then Chicago eventually like won out, and Milwaukee became like a little sister to Chicago. But because it's an old city, there's a lot of old buildings, and because it's an old city, it's a city that was built, constructed, and designed before cars. And when a city is built before cars, things are closer. Mm. There is just a more sense of it being set up. There is in Nashville, it's kind of less designed, you know?
Yeah.
The pikes.
That's what happens when, you know, a dozen people owned so much land individually, and now we have to sort of carve all that up.
Yes. And you got the river, which is difficult to navigate. You know, like in Milwaukee, you have Lake Michigan, gigantic, beautiful body of water sitting there. But that's the water mass is like you just don't go east. You can't go east. You know, it's north, southwest. And here we have to navigate around the river, which is really difficult. And so Milwaukee is a city built before cars. Milwaukee is also everything that is made that comes from Milwaukee is for Milwaukee. It has one of the most beautiful art museums in the world. And it's like, let's build this for the people who are here. You know, like, you have Summerfest, the biggest, you know, music festival in the world. And it's like, that's for the people here. Everything there is like for your friends, for your community, for the people who live here. Tourism, never a thought, you know? And that's a big difference in Nashville. And really a big obstacle that I've struggled with is like, I like being downtown. Mm-hmm. I want to be part of the city. But being part of – but, like, Broadway's, that's not us.
Right. Increasingly, it seemingly is not made for us.
No.
Yeah.
No. Not at all. Like, I always think, like, on Broadway, for every Titans game, all the flags are the opposing team. And they switch out those flags. You know, so that when you go there and, you know, the Packers are playing the Titans, you're like, oh, there's all these Packer fans bars, you know? But it's like, nah, they do. When the Browns come next week, it'll be all Browns flags, you know? Like, they're not Titans flags, you know? It's for tourists. And so that means that, you know, the rest of the city and the rest of the areas are for us, which I've found to be an adjustment. It's less walkable, but there's a lot going on. I mean, Nashville is an incredible food city.
True.
I love food, and Nashville has so like Nashville is a city that's alive. There's a lot of people that move to Nashville. It draws so many people. It's like they're. I think in 20 and 30 years, like, Nashville is going to, like, really kind of, like, have figured some things out and be a – I think it's really going to be even more of a draw than it is now. And in working in music, there's so much going on here. As a music reporter, like, in Milwaukee, I covered a lot of national artists. Was kind of like – I was like, well, there's not much going on here. Music – there's – not to say that like Milwaukee has a great music scene, it has an incredible music scene, and there's a lot going on in its music scene, but not like here, you know, where it's like here, like it's Music City. It's the capital of not only country music, but of incredible indie music, of music of so many different kinds. And then you also have all of the music industry. You have AEG, you have Live Nation, you have Soundstage, you have so many like interesting kind of like institutions of music business that are important to the rest of the country that have a Spotify office here. You know, it's like there's so much of the city and its economics are based around music that are unlike any other city.
Mm-hmm. And the big names all the way down through like every little record label and the vinyl pressers you talk to for Music Citizens.
There's more vinyl is pressed in Nashville than any other city by miles, by miles and miles. And we have three record pressers here. We have Physical Music Products. We have United Record Pressing and Nashville Record Pressing owned by GZ Media. And I went to Making Vinyl, which is a conference in Memphis. And I remember I asked somebody from L.A. And I was like, so I know that there are three here. There used to be four. I mean, it fluctuates. But I was like, L.A., there was a while where record labels had printers and had places to make vinyl. And I was like, I really don't understand the scope in LA. And I asked somebody, I was like, I know you don't have the big ones in LA, but is there enough small presses that you could come close to how many records were printing in Nashville? And he was like, no. No. He was like, one of your places prints more than LA. I mean, United Record Pressing and Nashville Record Pressing alone eclipse LA. Mm. Yeah, the amount of records that are pressed here is crazy.
And that episode of Music Citizens in particular, about various vinyl pressers in town, yeah. I found really fascinating in the kind of storytelling it was doing, where we're juxtaposing these smaller businesses and megacorp type businesses.
Yeah.
How do you approach that kind of storytelling how do you approach the kind of conclusion that you want an audience to walk away with? In terms of not necessarily giving them your conclusion, but giving them the pieces to make their own.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And I think that we in the podcast, the feel is I'm the reporter and Jason is the host. Mm. And we have a extremely natural conversation. I do the reporting for a month and I go in and I talk to whoever I'm talking to and I do my reporting. Then I kind of come back like an eager little kid and I'm like, Jason, let me tell you all the things that I figured out, which is, I think, is a really fun way. Me and Jason have great chemistry. And so there's we laugh a lot and it's just kind of I think it's easier for an audience to hear us talk naturally to each other than have a kind of thing scripted out. On that one, vinyl pressing, it was just so – we kind of went in and were we think the story is going to be that people – that artists can't get their vinyl pressed. And as I did reporting into it, found out that that was actually the absolute opposite, that actually we have more – we have record pressers kind of sitting on empty machines because of GZ Media, this huge corporation – out of the Czech Republic, who built a record plant here called Nashville Record Pressing and Memphis Record Pressing, and they have kind of totally dominated the vinyl space, and they've vertically integrated so they can do everything for cheaper. And when you're making a product and you can make it cheaper, there really is not a ton of incentive to go somewhere else. And I think Jason and I have our own feelings about this, but I think that a thing that we wanted in that one in particular is to I think there is a space for both ideas. Mm-hmm. We were following Piper, her plant can do less than 500,000 records a year. GZ can do 76 million records a year. There's no way that she can compete with them. Mm. But when you're dealing with art and artists, they want to go with somebody smaller. They want to have that different experience. And that's valuable. And I think we want to, we want to show that, but we also want to show that it's valuable for this company that is, semi-monopolizing vinyl manufacturing, that they are also providing a space for artists who also have things done for them, who it's really expensive to do anything as an artist, to be able to make vinyl cheaper. Oh. That's good. But also just kind of all these things are just laying it out, especially in that one in particular, where there's kind of you can take sides mm-hmm. on a thing. For Brent, and piano tuning is more just let's tell some fun stories.
Yeah.
But that one with the industry. And that's kind of always, I think that's always the dynamic in music and the music industry, is you have the big guys, you have the little guys, and what is it like being a big guy? What is it like being a little guy? Both are necessary. Mm-hmm. And
Yeah.
Try to follow both of them around and just tell their stories.
Yeah, and I realize I may have phrased that question in a slightly leading manner in terms of assuming that you were trying to leave the conclusion to the listener to some degree, but I phrased it that way because that was the sense it gave me.
Yeah.
Just laying it out of, like, here are the facts, and even though you get down to brass tacks about, like, this is a megacorp versus these smaller places with, like, weirdly dangerous machines.
Yeah. And I think, like, in the way that we do it with me and Jason, like, I think Jason is kind of, like, he is more willing to be, like, this is how I feel about something. Mm-hmm. Like, this is, like, and I think he is just, like, he has such a great understanding. He worked on the news side. Mm-hmm. He was a newscaster forever, and he's been in the industry here since 93, and he's been a musician. He's done all the jobs. And so I think he can kind of, like, offer a perspective that I can't. Mm. And I think, like when I say, like, my opinion, I feel like it's just less valuable than when Jason says his, like, honestly. Like, I defer to him. And I think, like, that's part of the fun of the pod is, like, a lot of, like, the dynamic is just, like, me being a gopher and being like, this is all the stuff that's happening. I'm excited about everything, and because I am. And then Jason kind of being like, well, this is what this means. And it's so valuable and such a good dynamic. It's like I love doing it because of that.
How long is the list of, like, Music Citizens episodes you want to do?
Oh, my God. It takes months to do each one because, one, you have to come up with a person, mm-hmm. you know, and... And then for each person that we choose, I mean, there's a list of 80 people that we have that's growing all the time. And it's like, you know, so you got a list of 80 people and we want to choose the right one. But then it's like, and you kind of, like, choose, you kind of, like, see what can happen. And so, like, that the process of just choosing someone takes a while. And also we're also doing other things. And then once we do, then you have to do the reporting, which takes a while. We got to set up an interview. I like to follow the person around. You interview other people, and then you go into the editing process. That takes, like, a month of, like, all right, I have for each episode that is half an hour, I have 20 hours of audio, and we have to cut that down. We have to, like, do all this stuff. So each one takes a long time, and in that space, the list is growing. And kind of, like, each one, we got 80 people on the list, and then I feel like kind of at the end of each one, I'm like, I want to do somebody that I just heard of in the last 5 days, you know, and that happens too.
Now, the constant draw of the new creative
idea. The shiny thing. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think that's about our time.
Wow. This is fun.
Thanks for coming on.
Yeah. I value this. Thank you for doing it.
Absolutely.
And thank you for the library. I thought we were going to talk about the libraries more. I grew up going to the Franklin Public Library in Franklin, Wisconsin. I remember I would go to the back corner of the nonfiction section, and they had all the DK eyewitness books.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember just looking, I remember opening those up and being like, I am going to go somewhere someday. Mm-hmm. And just looking at the pictures and looking at, like, the history and just letting my mind go wild with the idea that I could travel somewhere and that the world is larger than it is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I rented a lot of CDs from the library. I remember renting in 1999, they did a Bob Marley remix album that has all these incredible R&B and hip hop artists on it. And it's like, they've got, like, Guru and Lauryn Hill and all these legends on these Bob Marley songs that introduced me to Bob Marley. And I really value the library as a hang. Mm. I went when I go back and I work from Milwaukee for a week. Like, I went a couple of weeks ago, and I instead of, like, going to, like, a cafe or, like, a workspace or something, like, I go to the library. Mm. And I post up there and do my stuff. Like,
I certainly appreciate that. As I think there's obviously a lot of discussions in recent times of, like, the lack of third spaces.
Yeah,
and how the library is one of those few.
And I think that is, like, I am obsessed with third spaces. Mm. I, like, I think there's something about being from a city that really loves a dive bar. You know, there's like, I think there's something ingrained about being like, hey, there's this place down the street where you're supposed to go to every day, you know, where like a couple of your friends hang out. There's something in there. And I've always been obsessed with record stores, because of the hang. I go to Rushmore in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Dan's behind the counter. I know Dan is there. You know, I go there and I know that I'll see Dylan and I'll see, you know, Mark. And I like, it's, you know, they call them the Lonely Hearts Club. It's like the guys who just walk into the record store to hang out, you know, like I don't have any of their phone numbers.
Right.
But I see them twice a week.
Like, that's, you know where to find them.
You know where to find them. You find them, you hang out, you talk about music, you leave. For me in Nashville, it's the Belcourt Theater. I go to the Belcourt once or twice a week. And I know everybody that works there. I pop in. Your friends are going there. Like, that is such, like, an energy and a space to it. And, yeah, I think third spaces, I think, are very, very important for the arts, you know. And I think that, you know, the library was maybe, you know, one of the first third spaces where I could go. So it was, like, as a kid. You know, and like know that like my mom's there, she's gonna pick me up or something like that. But like you kind of like you can live on your own for a while and do your own thing and hang out. And yeah.
Well, thanks so much for coming on.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you all for listening. As always, the show is brought to you because of the Nashville Public Library. So whether you're listening in Nashville or beyond, go find your public library, get a library card, and use it. Because the best way to support your public library is to let it support you with all of the goods and services they offer. I bet there's more than you think. See you next time. We'll